Thanks for the meditations today. Those were great. And Dale's, yours especially, is going to play right into what I'm talking about today. So as we've been going through Romans 13 slowly, deliberately, with varying twists and turns as we go through it, today is yet another one of those. Last few weeks, 3 weeks, I believe, we spent time going over something called the hierarchy of submission that boils down to three different levels. We have the types of decisions that we have to make and follow, or commands that we follow. One's based on principle, where God has clearly spoken, there is a way that we need to move forward, and therefore we do. Next one is the area of execution, which is implied authority, in the sense that what we do is we have to execute the principles of God. So we have authority on making sure that that gets done. And there's a lot of freedom as to how those things operate. And then lastly, dealing with areas of conscience, where different people have different, and this is what we're going to be getting into today, convictions about different things and how they're to operate. And what we need to make sure is that those convictions, those areas of conscience and of liberty that Dale's talking about, that those flow from the Word of God, and that we then each have freedom as to how we follow those principles, and we might be completely different from each other. In fact, that if I were to engage in something that you approve of, but if I disapprove of it, to me it's sin, to you it's fine. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can think sin is okay and do it and it's fine. That's not what that's getting at. We're talking about different ways of implementing areas of conscience. So that flows into what we're going to talk about today. We actually have a lot to cover today. We're going to be talking about something called preference versus conviction today. And I came across this many years ago, probably close to 25 years ago, when we first started dealing with Christian education. And back in 1972, there was a Supreme Court case called Wisconsin versus Yoder. Now, Yoder, as you can imagine, was Amish. And the Amish have a concept, or at least these Amish folks did, that they could send their kids to school up into the age of eighth grade. And then after grade eight, they went and learned a vocation, typically farming, or something around the agricultural type of a concept. Because if you remember, Amish, part of their foundational principles of life is that they remove themselves from mainstream culture, from technology. And they have a strong belief that education after eighth grade is not something that they're a part of, especially when it's done in the public schools. Well, the Green County, I think is what it is in Wisconsin, ended up taking them to court. They lost their first case. He lost his first case because he has two kids, and he said, it is against my religious convictions to send these kids to school, public school. He lost on his first one, and they said, do this, or we're going to take your kids and put them in a foster home and put them in school. He said, no, I'm not going to do it. And then he appealed, and he lost the appeal. And they said, do it now, or we're going to take your kids and put them into foster care and put them into school and all these monetary fines. He said, no. And then it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court sided with him against the state. Now, what happened in that case brought things down to the level of preference versus conviction. The Supreme Court said your preferences are not covered by the First Amendment, freedom of religion. Your preferences are not covered. Your convictions are. And what the court went on to do is to define what entails a preference versus what entails a conviction. See, our concept, though, is that we need to be men and women of conviction. And if you want, you can look at this case up on the internet. It's very famously documented. The attorney's name who was talking about this. I don't know if he covered the case or not. I think he might have defended the case. It's possible. I don't know. But his name is David Gibbs from the Christian Law Association. He's 80 years old, and I think he's still practicing. But his whole life has been to defend religious folks from the overreach of the government. Now, when we were homeschooling, we were part of an organization that helped us out tremendously called HSLDA, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. It was a very inexpensive way to do this. If you homeschool your kids, I can't emphasize or suggest strongly enough to belong to some organization that has your back legally. Specifically, I love HSLDA. They helped us out tremendously in several situations, and not just dealing with homeschooling. I mean, one of this was an extension from it. We had an issue with Jaden. Can you believe it? We had an issue with Jaden. He grew like 6 inches in just a few months, 6 months or a year or something along those lines, and was having tremendous back pain. I mean, horrible, horrible pain. So we went to our family doctor, and she met with him the first time and said, "I think you're depressed. I think you're depressed because you're homeschooled. Wouldn't you really rather go to a public school? I think you need," and looked Jessica and I right in the eye, "I think you need to put them on antidepressants." Okay. That freaked us out a little bit because she was really overstepping her grounds. And we said, you know, basically we said, no, absolutely not. And then we left, and we were concerned that we were going to get a visit from child welfare. Stuff like that happens. So Jessica immediately gets on the phone with HSLDA, and they give us all the steps that we were that we legally had access to in Florida to be able to defend ourselves if the knock on the door ever came. And we went and found another doctor immediately, and he ended up having his spine was all out of alignment, went to a chiropractor for 6 weeks, and he was fine. Obviously, depression was horrible. You know, that the chiropractor fixed it through a series of adjustments twice a week for 6 weeks. But she obviously had an agenda, didn't she? So my point is, HSLDA or something along those lines, I highly recommend that you do it. It's not expensive. I mean, it was pretty cheap for us. I can't remember exactly what the cost was. But, you know, we all admire men and women of conviction. But how many times have you seen people take a stand on their conviction and yet the world laughs at them? Well, that's a dumb thing to take a stand for when they end up facing serious consequences for it. See, but conviction is essential to faithful living. It's essential to character building. It's essential to sanctification and integrity and faithfulness to God. And whether or not we compromise to sin is directly tied to the strength of our convictions. See, strength of conviction in the day-to-day things is the very exercise that determines whether we will have the conviction necessary when things are really on the line. So in both the United States and around the world, you know, certain events right now are bringing Christians and churches to have this be more on the forefront. You know, as we see liberty starting to erode, we're very concerned about these things, and we could end up having our convictions tested. And even if they're not necessarily tested, we may have to exercise them. I'm going to give you an example a little bit later on of something that happened with us in Virginia with the Hanover School Board that we had to make sure our convictions were set. And, you know, it was just course of doing business. It wasn't anything that they were targeting us. It was just simply the course of doing business in the state of Virginia when it came to our educating our children. So like I mentioned, David Gibbs did a really good job on bringing this topic to the forefront. And the fact that the Supreme Court laid all this out very, very clearly is going to be very helpful for us going forward. So they started off with two categorizations of helping with preferences. It says, first, the court stated that one can, or when it comes to our conviction, the court stated that one cannot hold a belief unless that person can somehow describe that belief. I mean, isn't that what 1 Peter 3, chapter 15 says? Be ready to give a defense for the hope that lies within you with gentleness and reverence. See, the court recognized that you have to have the ability to define it. It doesn't have to be highly organized or systematized. You don't have to be able to argue it like a philosopher or an attorney. You simply need to be able to articulate it in a clear and concise way. The court wants to see an individual show thoughtful consideration of their belief. I mean, this isn't something that you've believed since breakfast, in other words. Secondly, and more important, the court requires that you have a knowledge of your beliefs. Let's go to a good example of this is found in John chapter 8. We're going to go to a lot of scriptures, different scriptures today to kind of show this. John chapter 8, verse 31. It says, so Jesus was saying to the Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. They answered him, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free? Jesus answered, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son does remain forever. So if the son makes you free, you'll be free indeed. I know that you are Abraham's descendants, yet you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. I speak the things which I have seen with my father. Therefore, you also do the things which you have heard from your father. They answered and said to him, Abraham is a father. Jesus said to them, if you are Abraham's children, do the deeds of Abraham. But as it is, you are seeking to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, which I heard from God. This Abraham did not do. You are doing the deeds of your father. So Jesus makes this point. If you know the truth, you will be free. Their response is, we're Abraham's offspring. And Jesus states, if you commit sin, you're slave to sin. And you're doing the things of your father. And what's their answer again? Abraham is our father. See, here is a stock answer where they don't have any idea of what it is that they really believe. Because if they really believe they were Abraham's descendants, look what Jesus says. Verse 39. They answered and said to him, Abraham is our father. And Jesus said to them, if you are Abraham's children, do the deeds of Abraham. You're seeking to kill me. A man has told you the truth. Abraham didn't do this. See, they didn't have a knowledge of their beliefs. So our response, our equivalent today is, well, why do you have the belief that you do? Or if you get questioned about something, well, I'm a Christian. Okay, great. What does that mean? That's the point we're getting at. A lot of people might say, I'm a Christian, I'm a believer, I'm a Jesus follower. But they have no idea what that means. Maybe they were born into a religious family that attended a church somewhere. And so they think that they're a Christian and they do things that they have no idea why they do them. That is not covered, according to the court, under the First Amendment. The court views such people as hiding behind a title. Now, we looked at these areas of liberty, but one of the things I want to look at, let's go to Romans 14 for a second. Romans 14, verse 10. He says, but you, why do you judge your brother? Or you again, why do you regard your brother with contempt? For we will all stand before the judgment seat of God. See, we all have to stand before God's judgment seat. The conviction, conversion, righteousness, etc. that we all have is all done on an individual basis. We are not saved as a group of people. You are not saved because you're here with this group of people today. Our salvation, and we all know this, our salvation is on an individual basis. Therefore, convictions and preferences are not held as a group. They're held as an individual. And if you ever have to give an account of that, you will have to give an account of it as an individual. You cannot say, my church teaches X. So what? What do you believe, and how closely and tightly do you believe it is the question of the day. So let's dive into the concept of preference versus conviction. The court states that a preference is a very strong belief. We can hold it with great intensity and strength. I mean, how strong are we talking about here? Strong enough to where somebody can actually go into full-time service, dedicate their life to something, give money to it, suffer for it. According to the Supreme Court, a preference can be held so strongly that one will give all his wealth to support it. A preference can be so intense that a person will energetically proselytize for it. Stand on the street corner and preach. Go knock on doors. People still do that these days. But it's still a preference. See, the court says a preference can be a very strongly held belief, but it's a belief that someone will change under certain circumstances. And there are five circumstances that they gave that someone might change their view. It would probably be helpful if we went over those circumstances. Number one, it's peer pressure. The pressure of those around you, the pressure of the crowd, the pressure of your close network of friends. You know, this happens all the time. You know, you can have young folks and even older folks that maybe they believe something. I find it a lot with young people, though. They believe something pretty strongly, but they've never really had it tested. Now, they haven't gone out into the real world and been knocked around a little bit to see, do I really believe this or not? And then sometimes they grow up believing something really strongly, and yet that one right person comes into their life, and all of a sudden they abandon everything or some things that they've been taught because somebody makes googly eyes at them. And that's a very dangerous thing. But what that lets us know is that belief is a preference. It's not a conviction. And again, we could talk about this all day long. Sometimes people come into Christianity or whatever the case is, and then they're out in the world and they get pressure, maybe from employers or from their old group of friends. Hey, come on, you know, we always used to do this. Come on, let's do it. It's like, nah, I don't really want to. Well, man, if you're not going to do it, we just can't be friends anymore. Well, okay, I want to help bring these guys along, so, you know, I'll go ahead and do whatever it is that they're asking me to do. Well, that lets you know that, and I'm not condemning anybody for anything at this particular point in time. All we're doing here is stating, is the belief a preference or a conviction? What Dale talked about today in the meditation is a perfect example. So stating that everybody had to wear shirt and tie or suit and tie to serve communion, and yet none of them are doing it today, yet they were willing to split a church over it. That was not a conviction. That was a preference. And I would say that's a preference based on some really bad theology. No, we don't have those kind of dress codes here because I refuse to do that. Dale's right. The concept is we got to dress modestly. That's the bottom line. But there's nothing in the scripture, well, you got to put on your Sunday best for the Lord. Man, we're worshiping every single day. What are you talking about? Every single day. You know, we got some plumbers here. I tell you what, they're under a house covered in whatever stuff is under there. They're submitting to the Lord just as well as anybody in here when we're all in our Sunday best. See, it's a 24/7 kind of thing. So that conviction, if we give in because of pressure, it's not a conviction, it's a preference, and it's not covered. The next one's family pressure. And this is probably one of the strongest ones. Let's go to Luke chapter 14. Verse 25. He said, "Now large crowds were going along with him, and he turned and said to them, 'If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple.'" Whoa, what's Jesus talking about there? He's not talking about literally hating your family. He's talking about the fact that Jesus needs to come first, and by comparison, everybody else comes second. To where if your family members made the statement, it's either me or Jesus, it's Christ. No question. Now that's a radical concept. But that's the way Jesus lays it out. See, if someone's a Christian and maybe one spouse isn't, and that spouse says, it's either me or the church, the Christian spouse needs to do all that they can to try to help the marriage survive. But if everything is but short of compromising, if the person backs off the church, backs off Christ, and chooses the spouse, then it's a preference and not a conviction. There's a whole lot of other things going on there at the same time. But if someone is willing to change their belief because of family pressure, it's not a conviction under the Supreme Court. One of the next ones is fear of lawsuits. If someone backs off from something because they might get sued over it, now we're getting hit where it hurts, right? I mean, just to retain a lawyer, you're looking at spending thousands of dollars. On a lot of these civil cases, attorneys are going to ask for $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 up front to take the case. If that happens, you're like, whoa, hold on, I'm sorry. You know, I didn't mean that. Preference, not a conviction. Next one's jail. Now, I've never been incarcerated, but I used to do prison ministries, and I'm not saying it's the same. I'm just saying I've been inside the prisons, the county jails, and those are, from what I understand, people like getting out of the county jails and getting to their main place of going because county jails aren't great. That's what I hear. I don't necessarily know, but man, those places are rough. And just the threat of that can cause somebody to fold. Well, guess what? That's a preference, not a conviction. What about, you know, guys who are like, okay, well, I can handle prison. What if it's your wife? Would you tell your wife to back off? That's tough. That's a whole other realm right there. See, so having that concept of having the conviction laid out in your head and knowing what you believe is exceedingly important. Last one, most obvious one, pressure of death. Let's head over to Luke chapter 22. People die for their convictions all the time. Non-Christians die for their convictions all the time. Remember 9/11? One of the things that always bugged me about how people describe the murderers that flew the planes is they call them cowards. I don't know if you were around back then. That's the word that I heard used a lot, the cowards that flew their planes into the World Trade Center. You could call those guys a lot of things. Coward is not one of them. Not at all. Look up the definition of coward. They were not. These guys had such strong convictions that they purposely got up that morning knowing that they not only were going to kill themselves, but they were going to kill other people as well. You can call them insane. You can call them delusional. I wouldn't call them insane. I would call them, that's the natural result of what fundamental Islam, literal Islam, teaches. That's what that was. But, you know, there are fates worse than death when it comes to your convictions. Let's look at Luke chapter 22. Let's look at verse 33. But he said to him, Lord, with you I am ready to go both to prison and to death. Peter said that, right? And what's Jesus say in verse 34? I say to you, Peter, the rooster will not crow today until you have denied three times that you know me. And you remember what happened, right? He denied him three times. That very night. And if you look down at verse 62, and he went out and wept bitterly. Judas did the same thing. And he ended up killing himself over it. Peter had such a guilty conscience for what he did. Violating your convictions, something that you believe was a conviction, something that you thought you held so tightly that you were willing to do whatever it took, and then denying that can create tremendous guilt. Now, the great thing is we have forgiveness for those types of things, but it's not something that we want to have to experience. So the question then comes, those are the five things. The other questions that the Supreme Court was looking for is this. Is the belief really yours? So, for example, the state of Virginia has a beautiful thing for parents. I don't know if they still have it, but when we first moved here, they did. A religious exemption, which allows you to petition the school board to... So when you homeschool, you have to report. I don't know what the reporting situations are like here. Homeschoolers might know better than I. But our kids were close to being done. Joel was done that year, and I think Jaden only had a couple years left. And so we decided, instead of doing the reporting thing, let's go for this exemption, where if you can be granted this religious exemption, they will never, ever talk to you ever again, and you never have to report anything. So in order to do that, though, we had to write a letter that was very precise that stated exactly why we believed it. Not that we didn't necessarily like the public schools or this, that, or the other thing, but that it was an absolute conviction of ours to never have our kids set foot inside of a public school. And it needed to be based on our beliefs brought out from scriptures. So I did it. We wrote that letter out, listed all kinds of scriptures, and explained step by step why putting our kids into a public school would be a violation of our religious convictions. And it wasn't super long, and I think I referenced probably four, five, maybe six scriptures. I've got a copy of the letter if anybody wants to see it. And then the school board met, discussed our letter, and gave us the exemption. And we never had to report again to the public school system. But that's where, in the normal course of business, we had to sit down and say, okay, what's our conviction? And it's not something that we came up with, you know, on the fly. It's something that we had believed for many years up until that point and had it clearly articulated in our mind. So I was able to write it in, you know, about an hour or so, just because it's just stuff that I have inside my head of what we believed. See, so that's what the Supreme Court's looking for. It's what does your belief mean to you? See, having preferences is not a bad thing. The scriptures are full of them. I have all kinds of preferences about what I see in the Bible that I'm absolutely willing to give people all kinds of grace over. There are some conclusions that I've come to that I hold strongly, but I'm not 100% certain that I'm 100% right, so I wouldn't necessarily die for them. Would I really die for the identity of the man of lawlessness in 2 Thessalonians 2 being the Pope? That's my view. No. Because I'm not 100% certain. I'm probably about 50% certain. How's that for a conviction? It's not one. But would I rather die than send my kids to a public school? Would I rather go to jail? Would I rather be sued than sending my kids to a public school? Absolutely, I would. No problem. See, we all have these hierarchies of things that we believe. But you see, the tendency in our day is for people to compromise on everything. You can't hold something too tightly where you would be sued and not give it up, have your family break up because you won't give it up, go to jail and not break it up, go to death and not give it up. We've got to be those kinds of people that have absolute conviction on these things. Let's go to Daniel chapter 1. We'll finish up in the book of Daniel here. There's a lot more stuff in here, but I think you're getting my point. You know, Daniel had a lot of conviction. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had a lot of conviction. Here's something else I noticed. Let's go to Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. It says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem to besiege it. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of the Lord. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of the officials, to bring some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and the nobles, youths in whom was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had the ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king appointed for them a daily ration of the king's food and from the wine that he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the personal service. Now among those, or among them from the sons of Judah, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So there was a bigger group of people. Some of those people were Daniel and his buddies. Notice how the conviction started. Look at verse 8. But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or the wine which he drank. And he sought permission from the commander and the officials that he might not defile himself. Now God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander and the officials. And the commander and the officials said, I am afraid of the Lord, the king, who has appointed your food and your drink. For why should he see your faces looking more haggard than the youths who are your own age? Then you would make me forfeit my head to the king. So notice what Daniel's conviction was doing. Now, was Nebuchadnezzar a reasonable king at this particular stage? No. He was willing to lop people's heads off pretty quickly. What Daniel was doing was risking his life. Why? Food. He was not going to eat anything unclean. Or probably dedicated to their idols. And he was willing to put his life in danger and the life of the commander in danger. And then what happens as a result of him doing that? Then his three buddies went along with him. What were the other follower, or what were the other sons of Judah doing? Eating the stuff from the king's table. Preference, conviction. And what did that lead to? It led to Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael standing up when everybody else was kneeling at the golden statue, caused them to be put into the fiery furnace where they could have easily died, caused Daniel to be put into the lion's den. That's the kind of conviction that these people had. My point is, they refused to compromise. So the belief that they had was that of a conviction. The last thing is that they want to make sure that convictions are in your life. One of the last things that the court decided that they were going to do through a cross-exam, or through, as the attorneys were dealing with this, did his life match his convictions? Because if he states it's a conviction, but yet his life showed otherwise, then it's not a conviction. That's really where it comes down to with us. You see, convictions cannot be negotiated, or else they aren't convictions in the first place. Our life has to show these out. I can't say I've got a conviction of this, that, or the other thing, and then through well-placed questions or examination, we find out that my life actually shows all kinds of compromise. Then it's not a conviction, it's a preference. Like I mentioned, preferences they're not a bad thing. Everybody has them. But there are a lot of things that need to be convictions for the people of God that we're willing to take an absolute stand on. And that's why we're putting this in with the concept of government. Because in the United States, you need to understand legally when you have what the freedom of religion under the First Amendment covers and what it doesn't cover. Because the court has ruled on it. If you plan on operating under the First Amendment on a whole host of things, you have to recognize that if you end up getting prosecuted for something, it's going to come back to the concept of preference versus conviction. Not every little belief system, the whim that you have, is covered under the First Amendment when it comes to legal proceedings. So we have to make sure where we stand, have an order inside of our lives. What's a conviction? What's a preference? And then just because something's a conviction for us doesn't necessarily make it a conviction for somebody else, because in a lot of times these are matters of conscience. Other times they're a matter of thus saith the Lord. I'm willing to go to jail for Acts 2:38. If somebody, you know, if we live during a time where the Catholic Church was the law of the land, and I said only adults need to be immersed, and they need to be immersed for the forgiveness of sins and the gift of the Holy Spirit, I would have been persecuted and put to death for that. Would I have done it? Yes. Because that's a conviction. Go check out the Anabaptists. They were persecuted and put to death. Anabaptist means adult baptism. They rebelled against the Catholic Church for that. And they were persecuted and killed for it. That's why a lot of them fled over here. Huguenots are Anabaptists, I believe. And that's a big thing in this area. So go back and check. Think about these things. Lay them out. We have to put some time, energy, and effort into this so that we can figure out what's a preference and what's a conviction. All right, that's all I have for that.